Well, good day to everybody.
Good morning.
Yes, you can stay back. This is a friendly group. We're at Holden Village, summer of 1993. To introduce myself, my native name given to me in a ceremony would be Shina Tatanka, which means buffalo robe. In the Lakota, Dakota, and such language, they put the subject first and the adjective verbs afterwards. The name I was born with, white name as I might say, is John Banion. It's a name in which I was baptized as a Catholic because my father was Catholic. But my father was 5 years old, we later found out, my father was taken away from his people. And even, of course, as a five-year-old, he knew, say, his name, but we assume he never knew his identity, his heritage. We don't know if he was perhaps Irish, or we think it may have been more part Mexican or part Native American because of the circumstances in which he was adopted, which apparently was done very secretively. They simply showed up with a boy one day and refused to talk to anybody because in those days it was a shameful thing to be adopted. So the Damien family gave him a name he never asked for, in a sense, even though we were told later he loved them and they loved him. So, in a way, I have searched now for my full name. I know by blood my mother is white. She's German and English Lutheran from her ancestors who immigrated to this country. But I don't know yet if my father was native or not. And I'm trying very hard through courts and such to find out. That is a struggle for me, and that's part of what the story is about today. Our session is on Native American culture and history. And much of the history is very sad, I'm sorry to say. But not all the history is despondent. There's much in sadness that can make us strong, I found. And much in sadness that can also bring us joy. Not always in spite of it, but sometimes because of it, the journey we go through. Well, to set the program for today, first, we will not be ceremonial as we were the first 2 days of my programs when I spoke about the Native American spirituality and Native American ceremonies and rituals yesterday. Tomorrow I'll be speaking about Native American art and dress. And for some of you, just to give you a plug for me, tomorrow we will have a chance to see my full regalia, and this time to simply not just show up, which is the right of any Native person, simply to show up and not say a word to you about what it means. We owe no one any obligation. Just as in a sense, you owe nothing to me to explain, why do you like that shirt? Why do you like that pattern? Why do you wear this piece of jewelry? But I will explain all the pieces of the regalia I wear, my feathers and beads and skins, and what they mean to me and in a sense, generally to Native Americans. And all the feathers I brought with me from the East, Midwest, you know, North Dakota, that I'll give to you, those who come, until we run out, I guess. I have 31 feathers. And I'll give to all those who come. We can make a feather decoration for ourselves or for someone else. Friday, it'll be about dance. And that's when we are going to dance, right? Actually, during the lunch hour. And the dance will be what we call round dance. And it's not meant to be a sacred ceremonial dance where only a few can go. It is a social dance open to all races, all ages, both sexes, all levels of income, all levels of intelligence as such. Anyone who can put one foot next to the other foot is welcome to come. And we'll dance out in the village center. Invite everyone to come after 30 minutes, I think 20 minutes of lunch. They might just be finished enough time to actually do the dance. And I'll explain also that day about the powwow. As one person said, I went to a powwow, but nobody explained it to me. Well, it's not necessary, really, but it would have been nice if they had. But I will explain step by step what a powwow means. Now, Greg, do you have a watch? Can you get a watch? Right. What am I saying? Wait, today I wore my own, that's right. See, I thought a little plastic Casio would look great next to deer skin and feathers from a turkey and crow beads, so I didn't wear it. Okay, we are right on schedule and we will keep to the contract to respect of you and of myself. I'm no particular rush. In fact, I'm working real hard at not working this week. Of relaxing. So after our 1 hour, we will finish at 11:30. You're free to stay and talk if you'd like. I'm trying to recall, I don't believe there is this room scheduled for any other program immediately following. Is there one, what time?
11:30. 11:40.
Oh, so we will just wander down to the dining room and have some delicious food. We can talk there if you like, or later in the day. Now, first, to speak about the culture, what it was like if you and I were born 200 years ago, and I say, to start the very beginning, each session, I speak from what I know, which is very little, but what I know has been given to me by the elders, by the grandmothers and grandfathers, the teachers of all the people. And I lived for 4 years as a Lutheran minister among the Lakota and Dakota people. Mostly it was the Dakota, or the pronunciation of the Dakota. They are the people of North Dakota, mostly, who lived on the Fort Totten Sioux Reservation. Sioux is, of course, a white word. Their word is the people, or simply the Dakota. And I lived for 3 years out east among the people of Wampanoag Nation and the Mi'kmaq and Nipmunk Abenaki who lived in that part of Massachusetts. From them I received my name, and I was adopted by the people of the Red Eagle Clan, who are mostly of Mexico and New Mexico, who had visited Massachusetts for a Sundance and had adopted me into their membership. Well, to begin with a culture, I say therefore that those I've met, at least those I listen to, I should say, are the traditional ones. Today, no such thing as an Indian. I can't tell you what it's like to be an Indian. I can tell you what it might be like to be a Lakota 200 years ago in a certain part of the country. It'd be like saying, what is an European like? No such thing. You might say, well, what's an Italian or a Spaniard or a Greek? You might be able to describe that way of life. The same way, each nation, each tribe, each clan has their own ways. But I can't speak here in 1 hour of every clan, every tribe, every nation. But I will speak of the elders, the traditional, the old ones who follow the old ways of Lakota and some from the Wampanoag, Mi'kmaq, Nipmunk, on and on, of the Algonquin people of the East. The culture, what was it like to live like an Indian, if you were born an Indian, raised as an Indian, especially of the Northern Plains? Greg is going to help me with a drama here to show you basically how two white people, and I say stereotypically, exaggerating how two white people meet and greet and speak to one another. And I don't know how well the microphone will pick up, but Greg, why don't you and I step over this area. Now we are two Washishus, two stealers of the fat, two, as they say, the white people. Remember in Dances with Wolves?
Yep.
So, Washishu, Washishu, and a woman runs with her children. It's Whitey there. And from my side, at least we know my little Whitey. So, great. We're just reading here. Hey, man.
Sam. Hey!
What you doing?
I've been doing hiking.
Hiking?
No, it's that, terrible.
No, I've been hiking. I love it.
No, the mud, it was terrible.
You're weak. You're weak. That's why.
No, there was tons of bugs. Oh, you stop. You can leave it.
Okay. Now. Now, Greg and I are two old men, traditional, raised the old way of Lakota, or Dakota, and we will greet each other. And the sound technician, just keep the tape rolling, no matter what you hear or don't hear, just keep it going. And let's see what happens. And we greet, Now, we took swing. We are in a house. We're in my house. You sit down. And this is what we do. Is anybody getting a little bit nervous yet or wondering what the heck? When are they going to say something? You see, this may go on for 5-10 minutes. This may go on for an hour sometimes. To be raised Indian was to be raised one of the primary things. as a man or woman of respect. And what that meant is your mouth was smaller than your ears. You listened more than you talked. And in many cases, let's start from the beginning. You're a boy or a girl. Eventually, what they hoped, of course, you would be is a strong and a good mother, or a brave and a honored warrior father. Now, to explain the way this was, it was not meant to be sexist. Okay, so it's understood. It was just the way it was. Now, maybe some of you still say it's that way, but again, I do not come here to argue or to defend or debate. That's not the point. Simply to say the way it was. And the way it was everyone did agree this is the way it should be, and that people were strong because of this, and they withstood their enemies, and they themselves had joy and hope. And these are the days, I'm saying, before the Washishu, before they came with the reservations and the guns and the missionaries. A little boy or a little girl. And I wish, you see, we had some children here. So do we have a little boy that would like to volunteer, though? Someone just wants to play the part of a little boy.
You can.
Okay, why don't you come up, little boy, and you have a seat here. A little boy needs a grandma. Who wants to be a grandma? She's too young to be a grandma.
No.
Why don't you sit next?
I got the ham to do it.
Why don't you sit next to him?
This will be a wonderful grandma.
Well, grandma, do you want to bring a chair up for her? Somebody, or offer her your chair.
She needs a chair. Grandma needs a chair.
Yeah, can somebody bring a chair up here?
Can I have a chair?
Is there one with a cushion? Make sure it has a cushion, though.
You sit over there.
Make sure grandma's comfortable. See, we
okay.
The elder, wait, she would grandmother. So there's a cushion there. Somebody put a cushion for her so she's comfortable.
Okay.
So,
okay. Should I sit down?
Yes, sit down.
Oh, thank you.
What grandma needs is not help, but what grandma needs, I guess, is honor and respect. And in the old ways, grandmothers and grandfathers were never laughed at, never called old biddies, never said they were senile. They were said instead the very opposite. They were the ones who were the wisest. Now, we know it doesn't mean that they always did the right thing, because, I mean, they had native people, of course, who were stupid sometimes and made mistakes. But it was thought that through life they learned many things that could only be learned through life. And so the grandmother now, you would have told this young boy, say this 5, 6, 7 years old, what it meant to be good. Maybe you could just say, what do you think? What would a good boy do?
A good boy would be helpful. A good boy would be honest. A good boy would want to learn everything he could learn. And a good boy would always clean his plate.
Oh, that's the grandmother speaking. Now, among the northern plains, often, we don't clap. I've learned this from the Eastern people. Let me explain this. It's considered to be offensive to the spirit world. Now, I know people clap at powwows, but you maybe will notice many times, unless they do it just to accommodate the whites, when I say whites, I'm trying not to be using a bad word, which is a generic word. They try to accommodate, but generally speaking, the elderly people of those I was told over the East say it sometimes offends the spirits to clap. What we say is a hope. Would be a good way. So, now if grandmother says something nice and you want to say, don't say yeah, but you can just say, oh, if you agree with her. And now, so we are tribal people now. Now, grandmother, you get an A+, because this is just what the grandmother of Lakota would have said. To be honest, to be good, I don't know if they said clean your plate. I do know they did not, they said don't be greedy and take more than you can eat, because they didn't really necessarily have plates as we think of now, but they had bowls. Or they had rawhide dishes, you might say, such as that, or not too much pottery because they were nomadic. Now, grandmother, young man, would you laugh at your grandmother?
Laugh at my grandmother?
I mean, laugh as mocking.
Laugh at my grandmother? No.
What would you say to your grandmother? How would you treat your grandmother?
I would treat my grandmother with love and respect. And I always did.
Now this would be a good Sioux boy.
That's a good one.
We hope, you see, grandmother, and grandmother encourages him. Okay, thank you, children. You can go back. You can go back. Well, I'll tell you what, grandmother, you stay there.
You be a good boy.
Now we need a young girl. We're going to go through the ages. I'll explain this. A girl about 14, 15 years old. Because in the meantime, our young boy has grown up, and what grandmother and grandfather and his mother and father would likely have told him, and his uncles, was how to hold a bow. And I'll refer to this every now and then, because how many of you raise your hand have seen Dances with Wolves? Okay. We have, what 25 people here, about 20 of you at least raise your hands. Dances with Wolves was to me, the first, I don't say the first of all, but first of the major budget, first class motion pictures that ever set it right, that showed Lakota as human beings, okay, not as savages or animals or devil worshippers, but as human beings. Others have done it, but they were much lower budget, and maybe most of you never heard of those films. But they did get a few things wrong. Okay. Only to say this, just pique your interest. They showed when the Pawnee were attacking, and one man with the many earrings, the hair cut both sides straight up like that, and he was the man who was screaming at the end, 20 guys shot him at once, you know what I mean. The boy, remember, one of the boys shot him in the leg with the arrow. He turns around, screams at him, and charges for them. And he was going to kill him. What did the boys do? They're like, oh, Bobby! And they dropped their bows and arrows and ran. I mean, I hope they didn't see this enough. Those boys, by the age of 6, probably would have had 10 arrows in that man's chest if they wanted to. By the age of 6, they could kill a man. They could down a deer, if they were that coordinated enough. They could take a turkey or something, or a buffalo even, not at that young age, of course, but they were trained to shoot buffalo. They were expert, and I've heard of the young warriors who could shoot 5 arrows at a time before the first arrow hit the ground. The other 4 were behind it, still going. That's why sometimes I preferred the rifle in combat, because in those days, they usually had a single shot. It wasn't repeated so later, and they could kill 10 soldiers, let's say, before they even reloaded. Okay. So the young men were taught to be fierce and to be strong and to be brave. It doesn't mean they weren't scared at times, but they wouldn't sit there and drop their bows and arrows and run crying back to mother. I mean, that no Indian boy would have done that, and if they would have, he would have been ashamed of it. A young girl now, she's 14. This young man has grown up now. He is learning to be a warrior. He can go on the path if he's even 15 or 16. He can't marry yet until he's proven himself as a warrior or as a holy man. So he may have to wait till he's 18, 20, 25. Now the young woman, what would you say to the young woman now? She's thinking, contemplating marriage. How would she make a good wife?
Do?
Say whatever.
Learn how to cook the food. But before you do that, you must learn how to plant a garden. The proper season, in the proper place. Water the garden and nourish it. And finally, you have food for your table and for your children. You must learn how to scrape the hides so that and dry them, so that they are well kept, and you will then have clothing for your family. You must learn how to sew the hides together for a teepee or hogan, whichever it is, so that your family will be protected from the cold. And most of all, you must be there as a rock for your husband when he comes home, a tired warrior, and for your children.
Oh, grandmother, will you be my grandmother? I mean, you be everybody's grandmother? You're so nice. Okay. Now, little one, now we're thinking now, not 20th century, okay, but in those days, what would you say back to your grandmother for the words she's spoken of to you? Grandmother, you can sit now, and young daughter. And this young daughter, again, I say just to contemporize it, When I say, "Grandmother, you're an old, out-of-date, sexist little old lady." No. See, in those days, the tribe understood and the tribe accepted this was the way. Partly simply because of preservation, but partly because that's the way they were taught by the ancestors, and that was considered holy teachings. And the girls and the women we understood from the writings, the missionaries and such, actually were really happy. I don't mean they were faking it, unless they had a rotten husband, because there were rotten men in those days too. They were truly content and happy to be the providers and those who fed. And very often, they were the ones who considered, in many ways, the real strength of the family, because the father, the warrior, defended the village, but the mother and the holy people carried the stories and in her lap would teach them these things. The father would also, but see, the women were so highly regarded and respected in this way. As you grew up then, as a young Lakota person or a Dakota person or just general Northern Plains people, you would have been free to hunt the buffalo. You would have been free, the men, to wear the skins of a warrior in your hair. If on your first kill, you would have been given most likely an eagle feather. And now you see some people in powwows, which I do not like, wear these fake feathers as in the style of a warrior. I almost feel like walking up to them, which I don't, being polite, say, "How many men have you killed in battle? Or how many have you counted coup? Why are you wearing that?" It is the same. See, John, now you're getting loud and excited. It is the same thing as my walking into an Army Navy store, buying a Congressional Medal of Honor off of some guy who sold it for God knows what reason, and putting it on my chest in a Veterans Day parade and saying, "See what I did. God, I wish they would kick me out of the parade." That's the same thing, I say, in the sense of people who simply want to play Indian. Those who go to the powwows, the Native people I've seen and met, they don't play. Though I know there's disagreement, but those I met, the old ones, they are real in their intent. And what they wear, all of them, is for a reason. We are going to be a little bit less loose, as I said. You can ask the question if you like.
Okay, you said, like, killing. Does that also mean, like, deer? If you're hunting deer or something, would that also count as having a feather?
No. Not that I've ever heard of.
Okay, just men.
The feathers, the position indicated a certain rank or honor, the shape of the feather, how many times it was cut, what kind of paint was placed on it, told you, if you would know immediately what that meant in the battle. By coup, I mean a soldier, a warrior, in most cases a healthy one, still armed, perhaps even on horseback, and you engage him, instead of trying to kill him with a lance or with a bow and arrow, you take your lance, let's say, and whack him on the side of the head and run off laughing. Now you might think, what a moron this guy's looking for. Well, yeah, he is. He's not a moron, though. He, in a sense, is following the code of warfare. A code, in a sense, it's like the code of chivalry of knighthood. That there are certain wars, certain rules of engagement. The other warrior knew he had just been counted coup on, and that soldier, that warrior, therefore, had a right then to wear a feather for counting coup. So also, that man then would say, "You sucker, I'm going to get you," and he'd try to kill that man. But the man in this rule would not then try to kill as he's counting coup. It had to be one or the other. And it was considered more of an honor to go to a man and just smack him and then run off, even with your back turned, maybe getting an arrow in it, than to, with a gun, shoot him at 50 feet away or something and just watch him fall. The warriors were taught fortitude, taught endurance, taught the trails, the way to follow. You could, if you wanted to find a deer, you didn't have to get binoculars or hope the warden or something saw one somewhere. You could read the signs. The women, as they grew, would learn how to skin the buffaloes or the deer to make the clothing, the deer skin or the buffalo hides for the teepee, to make rawhide, to pull the sinew off the backs of the legs or the backbone, to make their thread, to sew, not with beads until the Europeans came. They had stone beads, let's say, or seeds, but they'd use very often, the Northern Plains people, the quills of a porcupine, and they would dye them sometimes. And some of the most, it is called an artwork unto itself around the universe. No one knows of any other civilization but the Northern Plains people, especially the Lakota, the Crow, Blackfoot, I think, use dyed porcupine quills, little tiny things, and little bitty marks, almost just like yarn, back and forth on moccasins or on shirts or on leggings, magnificent colors. And You would have learned how to cook, how to prepare for feasts, how to entertain, how to be gracious. When you aged, you would be able to retire, in a sense, from battle, be considered a counselor for war if you had proven yourself worthy, or as a holy person. All your life, you may have never had to enter battle, or maybe you proved yourself in battle and was also a man or woman who had visions, or had dreams, or had somehow, even at times, inherited what they call medicine, the medicine of say, a bear to heal, of the hawk to see or to understand, medicine given to you by plants or animals or by insects, things told that you could do or songs that you could sing. As you reach your elderly age and you knew death was approaching, in most cases, and you were not terrified or ashamed. It was a thing that was considered, in a sense, that you would serve an honorable life. The only one thing I do know, of course, I've read, is that among many of the people, the warriors, the men especially, they didn't want to die a old age. We hear the readings, the writings, or the recordings of what they said, written down, that very often they would say around the council fire or such, it is a good thing to die when my arms are still strong, my eyes are still clear, my feet still run fast. It is a sad thing to die of old age when I'm old and cold, and whatever, and all things are gone. I'd rather die in battle as a man. And there are many, in a sense, men who put themselves, not as if, I mean, don't mean foolishly, to become, liquor-wise, become widows, but in defense of their village, put themselves at times in extreme danger, knowing that if they died, though, they died, in a sense, with honor. And there were women as well, not often the children, but even the women at times would fight, if it meant to be, to defend the village. And the code of honor, the code of bravery was never broken, that we hardly ever hear of. Very few cases we know of where a Sioux man or Northern Plains man ran or was afraid. And if they were, it may have been the end of their association with the tribe forever, or perhaps for a year or so as punishment. But they were taught to be honest, as grandmother said, to be kind, to be gentle, to be humble. In battle, they could be deadly. But in the home, and around the council fire, and in laughing and dances, they could be very gentle and very kind people. Now these people then, without invitation, and without recourse whatsoever for any other negotiation, the invaders came. I did not say the discoverers, I did not say the explorers, I did not say the adventurers, as some movies say. I said the invaders, as if people from Mars had come to our planet to take over. It was literally that. Land that was understood as belonging, not like this is my square acre, but this is Wakantankas, the creators. But this is land that he gave to us to raise our children. These strange people with white skin, long hair on their face that look like monsters, they said, and horrible manners, loud mouths, and shining weapons, and for the first, was it, yes, among the Aztecs, eventually in the Southwest, the horse, but for the first time to see the horse, a terrifying thing, and never to have held a long sword. They understood, like the obsidian knives, to have held a sword, to have seen a cannon fire, to have never have known that. The invaders came. The invaders were led, okay, in part by Christopher Columbus, but Christopher Columbus indeed was led by the mindset of the age. See, Christopher Columbus is not really the enemy in a sense. It was all Western civilization. All those people who for centuries said, what is good in life is to gain. And if I can't get it, I'll take it. And I can go without knocking. Or I can claim this by simply shoving a flag into this land without understanding what is beyond me. The arrogance. And you understand the absolute arrogance and gall and greed. Now we're going to show you this second drama how I learned when I was in junior high, as best I can remember, I learned that Columbus and his men on his first of four voyages was a hero. And Columbus Day was something to be celebrated. And this is how I understood it.
First, there was a meeting. Columbus, he gets off the boat, he sees the Arawak. How many of you know what state did Columbus ever set foot on in the United States?
None.
Hallelujah, a group of smart. You know how many people think he set foot on North America? He was in Central America, Venezuela, wasn't it? But he was in the Bahamas, Columbus, you moron. He thought he made it all the way. See, he didn't know.
Where to go for a vacation?
Let me say this one thing.
He
did not know America existed. He thought he literally was landing near China. Right? You moron. Well, give us to him. He was probably of his time, if not the, one of the world's greatest dead reckoning navigators. He knew exactly where he's going. But I'm saying moron because he didn't know America was there. But in a way, well, Columbus, nobody showed you, so I guess you're not a moron. You just, nobody told you. Why am I? Okay. Columbus was a brilliant navigator. He literally thinks he's meeting, I assume, the Chinese. He was also looking, I guess, for the land of the Japans or the Japanese and such. But they have dark skin. He sees them, and Columbus is something like startled, but he wants to be polite. So he gets off his boat, wherever the Arawaks are there, the Bahamas. Okay. He's seen them. Now he makes contact. I understood it as this. He gently bows and greets them. Of course, he knows what he's about to do, but he's polite. And then there's exchange. And he, this was told. To one of them, he took off a necklace, I believe, of some gold medallions, or a gold Christopher or something. Took it off, gave it to one of the, I believe it was still in Bahamas, the native people. The native people were gracious, and they gave back to him a mask of solid gold. Biggest mistake they ever made in their lives. Now, this is the way the contact really happened, to dramatize it, like that. And then there was subjugation. Columbus is like this. And then there was what he called Christianization, like this, and with a sword, not his own, but of the Spaniards he brought eventually, they said, do you believe in Jesus, and will you be baptized? If they said yes, literally, they took the sword away. But they said, you're down again now. They said, no, no. This is what happened. I tell you.
Sit down now. Dead Indian. Now. And it is known in his first voyage, Columbus was a man who said prayers every day on the ship. We have to understand this man. He was a very complicated man, a very extremely devout Catholic. And he had gone there on his journey, it said, to bring the heathen to God. And literally, I don't think he was lying. You see, in his own mind, this is how he understood was conversion. And believe me, those who are Lutherans, don't laugh. Those who are Episcopals, those who are Catholics, don't laugh. Because for centuries, we've been doing the exact same thing in South America and Central America and Africa and India. We have gone over to say, to be Christian, you must be white. Okay, basically is what we have said. Now, of course, most of our denominations are trying to become much more sensitive and culturally aware. In fact, some of us have apologized. I hope with deeds as well as words, what has happened. What literally happened is in his first voyage and Columbus came over, he had a hard time getting his crew. It is not true that he emptied the jails of murderers. There's only two that we know of that were from the prison. I think both were because of debt or something like that. Perhaps one had committed murder in his life. But these are men who simply, some went for adventure, some wanted gold, some just wanted to get the heck out of that part of the country, and who knows what, they might find some beautiful island women or something like that. Because we later found out some of them were interested in that. By his second, third, and fourth voyage, any of you ever saw 1492 Conquest of Paradise, the first movie that finally also, of a major budget, didn't totally glorify Columbus, though most of them do shed some light. It showed Columbus, it didn't even show enough. We know from the journals, we know from records of others who were with him, and the priest who accompanied him, he literally went almost temporarily insane, because he got sick is what it was. I don't mean he went psychotic. But he literally got fever. I think it was on his third voyage. He became so, in his mind, so warped. He literally began like give directions of where to sail, and they would have crashed into a land or something. He began to talk about the gold is still over there. There's a mountain of it. I know, I'm sure. He'd asked his crew to make these ridiculous voyages. And eventually, they turned against Columbus himself. He was made governor of the island. He turned Spaniard against Spaniard and almost Indian against Spaniard as well, to where they finally brought him in chains back to the court. He, of course, asked him to keep on the chains because when he got there, the king and queen, the queen in particular, was so incensed, she said, poor Columbus, take him off, and restored his home and some of his property. He did not die a poor man, as some think. He was relatively wealthy. I mean, the man was incredibly wealthy because of the agreement he made with the king and queen, Isabella and Ferdinand, a tenth of all the wealth. I mean, my God, the man would have been fabulously wealthy. But he didn't live up to the bargain, of course, to pass it on to all of his sons and all the generations. And he died. This one thing in the movie was wrong, as far as we know from the log. He died thinking, still, he discovered a trade route by sea to China. He still refused, almost to his dying day, to say the Americas existed. It wasn't finally until the further adventures in Space Balboa and such on the Pacific, they finally said, there is another continent, folks. See, because basically what happened, let me tell you very quickly. He thought the Earth was the size of a volleyball. The Earth was the size of a basketball. So, in a way, he was right. In his mind, see, the way when he read the maps of the day, he literally was in China. I mean, it is a proven fact of navigation. You could almost equate, almost down to the mile. He really, and along the same parallel, he really would have hit China. So the man, in a way, was right. But he didn't know about the people who were not of India, as he thought, Indians, therefore, as such. But they were the Arawak. And what had happened eventually by the third voyage, he was demanding gold from them from the Bahamas. He landed in Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Cuba. And a hawk's bell, about to sign, I guess a record bell. And he said, I guess they cut off the top, however they did it, I don't know. But he would hand each of the natives, or he or his co-workers, hand the natives a hawk's bell. And a certain day of the month, they must come back filled with gold dust. Now, there was gold, you see, in Cuba, in Haiti, I believe, perhaps, because they saw it in rivers, but it's just dust. He thought they were hiding huge nuggets. Cortez later found the river of gold, almost, you could say. The only thing is, it was in the shape of a temple, so he burned it down or melted it down.
A quick comment. Yeah. They said instead they wanted gold, but instead what they did was the big profit was slaves coming back. That was where they got most of the money, was from slaves. So it wasn't from gold or spices, it was from slaves. So that was their big profit. And they sold it back in Europe for money.
Yeah, see, it was Columbus wanted the gold, but you're right, he never really found it, the wealth. So he had to appease the king and queen. And so he brought back the Indians as slaves. And some might say that's what started the whole African slave trade, because it kept on mushrooming. Because when some of the sugar cane began to run out, they needed the cotton plantation slaves in the Americas. And they found Africa. Anyway, they took the hawk's bell. They said, fill it with gold dust. And literally this is what we know by diary and record written such that we know by people who are thought to be very reliable. The conquistadors and such, I believe it was, if we could call them, the Spaniards, the conquistadors at times. When they didn't bring the hawk's bell filled with gold, they held out their hand and they cut it off, just like that. And it didn't take them too many times to do that before the native people began to realize these people are monsters. And the tribes rebelled, but no, they did not rebel, because these were not of their own. They were invaders, and they finally fought back for their own land. Rebelling is something like we did against, you do against people of your own land. These were the invaders, and they finally tried to push them back into the ocean. But they didn't realize, of course, was there were more boats to come. Which is meant eventually, of course, for the Dakota people, for the whole Plains people, for the Southwest, for the Eastern seaboard, the English of the East, the French in the center heart of the country, the Spanish, the French for trade, the English for land, the Spanish, I'm being very general now, the Spanish to build an empire, but mostly to get wealth and to Christianize in the Southwest, in the California area, where my father came from, where I was baptized in one of the mission churches as such, built by, not that old, that long ago, but built in the same sense of a mission church. What it meant then was the priests came and the nuns came and the pastors came. And we know that the fact from their diaries, they truly were sincere, I think, in most cases. But what they said was, we want to Christianize these people. We want to bring them to God's light. And what happened was, the priests, very often, and the pastors, with the soldiers, with their bayonets put on, and bullets in their guns, went into the tribes and took, literally, the bags of tobacco out of the hands of the holy men and threw it into the fire, burned down the medicine teepees, took the medicine pouches, which you have, none of us could fully understand, I think, unless we were there. It was ours. What it meant to take a man's medicine, a woman's medicine away. Ripped it open, threw all the contents out, and threw them in the fire and destroyed them. Took children, screaming and crying, this we know is a fact, out of the arms of their mothers and fathers, and took them away to Christian boarding schools. Literally, purposely, tore apart tribes to help decimate the people. Eventually then put them on the reservations. And in an actual, planned obliteration of a species, tried to wipe out the buffalo. And this we know also is fact. The buffalo hunters weren't there just for a good time. They were sent by congressional order to literally wipe every buffalo off the face of the earth. They said, we are so tired of spending, costing up to $1 million apiece to defeat the Apaches, I think in the Southwest, something like that, astronomical figure. They said that the Plains were not gonna go through the same thing. Let's kill their food and we kill the Indian, or subjugate the Indian. And literally, it worked. Because the Indians, you hear, like Chief Joseph, the statue is up there, and it's carved and beautiful. Chief Joseph did not surrender because he was weak of spirit or of body. He surrendered because his children were dying, his people were starving. It worked. The people then moved onto reservations. And those who had roamed freely this whole land were given little islands to live on, smaller and smaller every time. Every single treaty we know of broken. But as one Native man said, of all the promises made, you kept only one. You swore to us you would take our land, and you did it. Now things have changed. And I mean, in a way, you ought to almost clap your hands, say aho or something for joy, because you are in the one generation over ice where, from what I've seen to the east and now the west, nothing has changed this. 500 years, you are the first generation right now who suddenly has seen America wake up and once again begin to respect the Native people. This generation. What is happening right now, I think would not have happened even 10 years ago. It never would have happened in the 1900s early, never in the 1920s, even Collier in the 1930s and 40s, trying to revamp the whole policy. Never would have happened if BIA was in charge here. Never would have happened, I'm saying this in the spirit of kindness, if the typical priest or Lutheran pastor or Episcopalian or Baptist or Pentecostal of the 1800s was here. This is something new. And there are many Native people now who are suddenly awakening also and saying, maybe they aren't so bad either. You know, maybe we have misunderstood at times. And what I am doing here now has been encouraged and is being encouraged by many Native Americans who now say, as Slow Turtle, Supreme Medicine Man of the Wampanoag Nation, those who met the pilgrims, said to me once, I understand that there is no such thing as a red god, which shocked me. And he said, and you whites, you don't have a god either. No such thing as a white god, he said. There's no yellow god, there's no black god. He said, there's only one creator above. And the one creator, this holy, supreme medicine man of a Wampanoag Nation said, who never would say he was a Christian, that he ever said to me, said there's only one God above, and one God made all of the earth. And all the children of color, though of many colors, are of one race, the human race. That kind of thought and understanding is being heard more and more among the holy people and traditional people of Native America. And that is one reason why this is happening today. Now we have last 15 minutes to keep to our schedule. Do it right, 10:30 to 11:30. Do we have comments or questions or such from anyone? Yes?
Your comment about the feathers that the warriors would wear. I grew up in the military. I could tell at 50 paces the rank of a soldier, where they had served, what they had done in battle and in service, simply by the uniform, how long they had been in combat, how long they had been in service. The same thing.
Yeah. It's interesting. But, and see, those who wore their eagle feathers, not often they did because they were so sacred, but who purposely wore their eagle feathers in the battle, literally were saying, they knew the enemy could read it. And he knew then they were the first target. Because to kill an enemy with eagle feathers was even a greater honor than just to kill just an enemy. Because sometimes you were allowed to take their feathers, you see. But they would do it. Yes, yeah, first you, sir, and then...
How were people who were different in the tribe treated by the tribe? People with handicaps or blind people or homosexuals?
Okay. First of all, from all that I've talked to and all that I've read, and I've seen, I've researched this through 14 years now, not every year, but I've researched in Boston, which is in a sense the cultural mecca of the universe, as far as I'm concerned. It's also a rat race and a hell of a place to live. Don't live there. I went there to get education and learn how to make television feature films, which I did on a powwow. From what I read there and what I read from research done in North Dakota and such and among the people here, first of all, there was very little, if sometimes none, record. And they told stories, they would pass this on of other people, of any people that were severely mentally ill. There was no records of people like bizarre acting out attitudes. If they did, I mean, it was because like in a vision, they would read television. Okay, that's something different. But there's no, very few recordings of people who were seriously deranged or insane or mentally ill. They're literally, until they began to eat the white food, very few cases of pneumonia, of blindness, of deafness, of rheumatism, of arthritis. I mean, I don't mean to say they were all a fountain of youth, but they were, from the age, they were brought up to be strong and to be tough and to endure, and they did it. Those who were blind, or those, let's say, who were hearing impaired or such, or those who had handicaps, as far as I know, they were never made fun of. If anything, I mean, in some cases, it's almost considered a mark of the Creator to set one aside to be born blind. Not that you want to be blind. And in some cases, they were considered with awe. Okay. Like, this, see, wonkan is a term for holy. Wonkan is also a word in a sense for, if I could say it in a white way, different or strange or not understandable. And to be blind, in a sense, was different. But there's not a difference of shame. Sometimes it might even be considered a reverence, and that person would be especially honored. There are accounts of homosexuality and of cross-dressing, and in most all accounts I've read, they said, well, heck, if you want to wear a dress, you wear a dress. Like, just don't tell me to wear a dress or something. And there were, I don't know if there were actually like homosexual communities, let's say, per se, as we have now, or at least where people can be partners together. But it was known that if that was the orientation, it was simply understood that's the way the person wished. And it's like that in almost every area of life. Unless, of course, what you did hurt another person, they simply said, you are who you are. Who are we to judge you? I mean, it was a very freeing place to be. A very healthy, mentally healthy place to be, as far as I'm concerned. And you had one question or comment?
I just remembered when you were what you were wearing yesterday, you had feathers yes. in your hair. I was wondering what's the damage that those had. I'm assuming you hadn't killed people in order to get them.
It was on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wore them as adornment, not as, let's say, feathers of honor or of achievement. I mean, a lot of people wear them just as adornment here along their ears or along their shirts. Sometimes even along their ponytail, sometimes. It's a position of the feathers this way. They're of war feathers. I'll explain more about this on art and dress, but most people I know never wear feathers because they look pretty or they just happen to be there on sale at Kmart, let's say, in the big bag. Okay. The first feather is a turkey feather, a wild turkey feather, considered very sacred by the Eastern people, and it was given to me in a naming ceremony. The second feather was a long black, I don't know what it came from, but it was when I was out east and had given a talk at the end of the day, It simply was laying there. It was almost as in a sense waiting for me to come pick it up. And it was a great, I consider it a gift from that ceremony, that gathering given to me by the bird. Just to say real quick, most native people I talk to, the traditional, like, they don't go up to a bird and try to scare it and grab it and rip off a feather. You hurt the bird. Most people I know, all the feathers I brought with me are often feathers that already fell down or like were just laying there or in a nest or something. Or if they were hunters, they would say the prayers first and offer tobacco and then to kill the bird. And they would take the feathers, saying, brother or sister, this is for our people, for their honor. Even asking permission first to do it. And then they would only then give out the feathers. Mm-hmm. Same thing with skins or with beads or anything, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier, and it seems to me that something maybe, your last comments about things are changing in these generations. You go back to history, and the conquerors have always said you could beat that same. You look at the Bible, you look at the Mongolian hordes, you go to Japan. I'm just wondering, off the top of my head, I can't think of people that came in, you know, or looked at peace. It seems like this expansion thing has really been throughout history. And maybe yes. We're, something new is happening these days.
I hope so. It was only, just 1 second, please. It was only among the Iroquois, I thought, who had their federation. Most other nations never, and it was mostly just for self-preservation, most other nations never sought to conquer other lands. They just were in a way saying, by the tree here, the stream here, the mountain there, that's where we hunt and fish. Stay away. As long as they stayed away, it was okay. They didn't want to set empires. Well, is this still coming across that as well? Yes.
I think it's important to know the Iroquois just dawned on me that in 1744, I believe it was, Benjamin Franklin was a representative from the colonies to the Iroquois Nation. He later, 10 years later, wrote a plan for perpetual union in 1754 that described what a government could look like here, and it was modeled after the Iroquois Nation, including how the House and Senate are set up. That became the foundation for our entire governmental system in this country. It came from the Native Americans.
Yeah, few realize that.
Respect them for that and thank them for that. Yeah.
That the Declaration of Independence, much of it, Jefferson wrote and Franklin also wrote, but it wasn't very well known, that it was from the principles of the longhouse and of the way of living of the Iroquois Nation, their federation of tribes. They were the ones, he said, who in a sense said, one man, one vote, or in other words, one tribe, one vote, no matter how big the tribe is. They're the ones who believe in democracy. Okay? I'm not saying that they invented it, they're the only ones who had it, but let's not give all the credit to Franklin and Jefferson. We have a few minutes left, so yes.
There were conflicts between the tribes.
Well, absolutely.
What caused that? It wasn't territory?
Well, well, yes.
It was?
It was, let's say, basically three things. Invasion of land, but often the reason the invasion of land was the second thing, stealing horses, which was considered not so much theft, but a game almost. And sometimes simply revenge raids, because you stole our horses. But the Lakota, the Northern Plains, basically never had a large standing army, as we call it, 10,000 warriors ready to go to battle at a moment. Of a Lakota, almost all military engagements were voluntary. If you didn't want to go, you didn't go. You didn't like that the man who was a scout said, heck, I ain't going to that guy. Literally, you didn't go. Or if in your prayers, a voice said, don't go, or you didn't go. But when he did go to battle, very often it was to steal horse, well, steal, yeah, to take horses. Usually it was 5 or 10 men. And they would take 20 or 30 horses. And literally, probably the next summer or so, the same tribe would come back and steal 20 or 30 of your horses or so and go back, unless they were better horse thieves and such. But it's considered almost like a game, though. It was not considered wrong, evil. I mean, it's like, if you're so stupid as to leave your horses out there where we can take them, you deserve to have them taken. And that's about the way it was. Sometimes, though, it was hunting parties when inadvertently or sometimes purposely invaded other lands to get more buffalo. That was a serious thing, and they had to defend their own lands. Sometimes, again, it was revenge, just to get back in another tribe. But very often, the battle was like that. You don't know, there was no 4-year engagement. It was generally that. In the next couple of days, the party was back, and the matter was over. I mean, war, in a sense, was very regulated and a very honorable thing, even though it was a bloody thing, obviously. Yes, anybody else? Yes.
Other than oral history, are there any other... Did they record the history?
Generally, all we know is the... Was it the Iroquois, the Cherokee, had a written alphabet by one of the men who was educated. In fact, self-written alphabet.
Skoya.
I believe that was the
yes,
one.
Skoya.
Yeah. Of what nation?
Cherokee. I think it's Cherokee.
Maybe it's a Cherokee. All the others relied almost entirely upon you, sir, your stories, what you would tell your grandchildren, or you, grandmother, what you would tell a holy woman or a holy man in office. It was like the Hebrews, the Jews, oral history. And it was not sloppy. You would be shamed almost out of the tribe if you misspoke a story. I mean, you might forget the part, let's say, but you never try to fake it or necessarily, you might enhance it, let's say, but you wouldn't lie about the story. You would tell your history very faithfully. Memorize it almost word by word sometimes.
I think it'd be nice if you made a list on the board or something of books that people can read, because there's some really good books out now written from the perspective of the Indians. What about Dark Crow Talks? I think, I can't remember the title.
Black Hawk Speaks.
Is that the one where you learn it from their eyes?
Yes. Yeah. Well, see, I don't, there's so many books I've read, I don't remember more.
But let me just... I think that for people that are interested, okay. They need to start reading.
Okay. We need to wrap up too, but I think your statement is very good. I recommended they buy Black Elk Speaks. They bought 10 copies. I don't know if there's only 5 left, but on there it says, teacher recommended books or something. Black Elk Speaks, to me, is one man telling his story, which is the story of all of Native America. A tragic story and a triumphant story. Also, if you want to know more about Lakota, and through that, understand more about sacred ritual, The Sacred Pipe, it's called, by Brown. Sacred Pipe, the 7 sacred rites of the Lakota. This is called The Sacred Pipe, that's all you need to remember. Joseph Epps Brown, whoever wrote Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. The Bible almost, next to, I mean for all people. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, read that if you never have. Black Elk Speaks, The Sacred Pipe also. And there are many of the books, thousands now, that you can just, I guess, find a good recite. Yeah, they do have a good selection.
Beautiful one from a woman's perspective is called Daughters of Copper Woman.
Okay, Daughters of Copper Woman?
Yes,
okay.
Magnificent.
Okay. I would also, though, warn you, Indians sell, okay, if you understand what I mean. Not Indian holy people themselves will sell themselves, but there are many, even Indians, of course, we have to say, as well as many whites, who have found a major market and big bucks in selling these books about how they are medicine people or their great wanderings. And I see again, I know I spoke to this yesterday, I won't repeat myself again, but only to say, just because they say an Indian word or talk about Indian paint or say about bears or buffaloes or dolphins or whatever, don't think that these necessarily are people who are holy and sacred and know the old ways. There are many people now who are very good and know many things about the earth, about ecology. They believe in nature, Mother Earth, that are very good people. I'm just saying, don't swallow everything you see out there. Try to be careful, because many of the elderly people have really been hurt and offended by those who listen a few times and go back home and say, oh, I met a real Indian. Let me tell you all about what Indians are like. See, so please don't do that even after this week. But I do think you will be able to say, well, I knew more, or at least I heard more than what I came with. So you have a gift in a way to take home with you. Now, I wish I could give gifts to also the man and woman. I'm sorry. I only brought 2. But I want to give one to Greg, our helper. And this is not a cross of Jesus, no. Well, something. This is the 4 colors, the 4 directions. Among the Iroquois, I believe they had, which looked like a cross, some mistake for a cross, but the holy colors and the 4 directions of the universe, to the east, the south, the west, the north, and sometimes they wore it in big silver medallions. But if somebody can...
Give that to Grandma.
Yeah, somebody can give that. Don't, no, Grandmother, you be comfortable. Okay. So it's time to wrap up, and I thank all of you coming to Holden for this, and thank Holden for the opportunity to be here. Tomorrow it will be about the artwork and the dress, the regalia, as we say, of Oneida people. And Friday we'll have a big dance out there at the center, invite all the people to come, and you will learn how to do a round dance, a very popular Indian social dance. Well, thank you all for being here. Have a good day.